the name of the values that keep you alive, do not let your vision of man be distorted by the ugly, the cowardly, the mindless, and those who have never achieved his title. Do not lose your knowledge that man's proper estate is an upright posture, an intransigent mind, and a step that travels unlimited roads. Do not let your fire go out, sparked by replacing the spark in the hope the swamps of the approximate are not quite, the not yet, the not at all. The world you desired can be won. It exists. It is real. It is possible. It's yours.
Hi, David. How are you doing?
I'm good, brother. Very cool. I love it.
Yeah. Well, guys, welcome back to the Crypto Economy Podcast. I'm here with David, the founder of Orthogonal and many other things, Raiden Maker, Satsang, your investor in Y Combinator, investor in Betterment, all sorts of good stuff. So thanks so much for being here, David.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. So just, you know, to add, we were an investor in some of the first companies in Y Combinator. So just to kind of clarify that, but been very involved in that since like 2008.
I mean, that's way before I was in the space. So you've been around. So what are some of the things, you know, you really wanted to talk about? I was, you know, reading through your website, say about things like high vibrational commerce. One of your founders or your partners talked about that. You have a lot of interesting sort of, I guess, perspectives on how businesses should be run and the types of companies that you like to invest in. So what's your focus as an investor and the types of companies that you like to focus on?
I mean, you know, we always come at it from two perspectives. We understand, you know, as an investor, and first and foremost, you know, I've spent the last 20 years as an investor and being very hands-on. Yeah, you want to make money. Money is part of the frequency of energy. But I believe, and I try to explain this to people, I say, if you can do this out of 80% of it being your dharma, your purpose, or something you want to shift while you're on planet Earth, the money will come. So I've just always had a lot of dumb luck where, you know, followed my heart, got involved with companies that, you know, were shifting bad habits or habits that needed to be shifted in mankind. And, you know, the money has always come.
So when you talk about that, you know, what are some examples that would come to mind when you think about for mankind? You know, one, I guess, interesting. So sorry to cut you off, but one company that jumped out to me was Wizant, because actually the first company I started was supposed to be a direct competitor to Wizant, ironically. But again, it was democratizing tutoring.
Yeah. Right? I mean, again, that it all comes down to, okay, you know, we live on Maui. My daughter goes to Waldorf, and the Waldorf she goes to, they talk about, like, you know, doing farming on the solstice and, you know, planting seeds and, you know, being in the flow and rainbows and the moon. So it all comes down to, like, we have these habits that we've been taught about, okay, tutoring, our investing money, our, you know, renting a place. And we find that, okay, maybe everything they've told us is not actually accurate and there's a better way to do it. So I think it's a twofold thing. You have something like, right now I'm in LA and everybody uses Uber, and, you know, Uber's a great way to, you know, travel around without a car. But then you got to look at, you know, beyond that, like the people that drive the Uber cars, why don't they have equity in the company? Why isn't a company that's valued at over $100 billion giving back more, you know, helping? You can do so much more once you have critical mass that, for me, I got to a point in the last couple of years where I said, you know, I'm involved with over 30 companies that are doing well. Why can't I leverage that and actually give back and help people and, you know, co-create with others, which the people that I co-create with want to do the same thing that I do, which is, you know, give back that money back into the system.
Yeah, I mean, I totally understand that. I mean, that's one of the reasons we started this podcast and trying to lower the barriers to entry to some of these things. So what are the biggest problems, I guess, that you see that you think are important to tackle?
I mean, right now, the big one that comes to mind every day is transparency. I mean, one of the things that, you know, we saw early on, I was telling somebody the other day, we watched, you know, I remember watching Coinbase do their, let's say, 5-minute pitch at Y Combinator. And yeah, even back then, I mean, everything, I think the guys that got into this and what they were all looking for is a different path. I think we've all been lied to so much with everything going on in the world and in the government. You know, we want to be able to take things at face value. And one of the things I've definitely noticed with everybody that I've come in contact with in the mainland is nobody takes anybody at face value anymore. So I believe through the idea of, you know, transparency and cryptocurrencies and, you know, everything going on with the cannabis industry and the food industry, we're coming to a point that people are demanding transparency. Nobody wants to be bullshitted anymore. And, you know, the reality of it is, you know, I think we're all, as human beings, we're awakening. People are changing. I see it with my own kids. They're my biggest teachers. They, in some ways, know more than I do, and they're 5 and 7 years old. So I would say transparency for the most.
So what do you think has led to, you know, I guess, do you notice those things are different on the mainland than in a place like Hawaii, where it's more of a, I guess, more of an isolated test case? Do you think there are certain reasons for this happening? Do you have any ideas about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you live on Maui, you definitely are watching. So in Maui, we get 4 million tourists a year. There's $5 billion in basically ARR moving through Maui, through 80% being tourism. And I think it's even more like 90%. So we see all walks of life. So I think the best example is you fly into LA, you go to a place like Santa Monica, and yes, there's a level of homelessness. But when you're living in a place like Montana Avenue and all the houses are, you know, $10 million plus, and you don't have to leave kind of your neighborhood where there's Whole Foods and nice restaurants, it's a different situation than living on Maui, where, you know, one of the main places people shop is Costco. You have a very, centralized area where everybody shops for groceries, and a lot of things are imported from the mainland. So you see everything. You see, you know, the people that are dealing with mental illness and drug addiction, and, you know, families that are living, you know, 20, 30 deep in a house. And then, you know, on the other hand, you'll see Jim Carrey and, you know, Woody Harrelson walking around. So it's, I think when you live in a place, what I call like La La Land or San Francisco, there's something to it. You don't, you're not seeing what the reality of like a Midwestern that's saving for 5 years to come to Maui for 1 week.
Is that one of the reasons you're no longer in like San Francisco as much? Did you get tired of that?
You know, the reason I'm not in LA or San Francisco or in California, because I definitely love like certain parts of California, is I was looking for something different. I wanted my kids to connect to nature. And I think the other part of that is, you know, getting into the cannabis business about 10 years ago, I wanted to be somewhere where I could truly grow outdoors. And there was, you know, there was enough land where we could create a hub in the ag movement. And, you know, I really started going down this route about a decade ago, where I was like, you know what? I want to eat well. I want to eat products that are whole foods, don't have fillers. I want to smoke good weed. I want to know my farmer, because, you know, when a company like Monsanto buys USDA organic and then gets sold to Bayer, and then that company is owned by Berkshire Hathaway, yeah, which owns 10% of, you know, Monsanto and Bayer, there's something really wrong with that. I go to the grocery store and I'm like, Doritos are organic now, and so are gummy bears.
Yeah. Yeah. Up is down.
Yeah.
That's right.
There's something off with that.
No, I certainly agree. So how do you think that lifestyle has changed, I guess, your experience? So, I mean, I was as far as like the marijuana industry goes, I guess just my experience, you know, I broke my hip when I was a senior in college. They got me hooked on all the painkillers and whatnot, and I went through the ringer of the pharmaceutical industry and very quickly realized that everyone you talk to has very little experience with the drugs that they're giving you and even less experiences with the long-term effects of them. So what brought you to the weed industry as a lot of people were wary of it? Because, you know, 10 years ago, it was not what it is now. 10 years ago, a lot of people were still getting arrested and thrown in federal prison.
Well, I'm going to go back to like a deja vu that happened last night. Last night was my sister's wedding, and I'm not really big into like the Persian Jewish community, which is where my family's from. And basically, I was there with like 30 of my cousins and second cousins that are doctors, and some, you know, uncles that are doctors. And some of these people are people that knew me as a child and didn't realize that I was dealing with Asperger's and autism on my own, and took me down roads. And I know my mother's going to kill me, but took me down roads where, you know, they were giving me Adderall and giving me Lexapro and Xanax, and you know, basically came to a point where I was like, really made me feel like something was wrong with me. And just, you know, understanding since I was about 11 or 12 years old that I had to, you know, I had to go to something else like cannabis, which, you know, really was my saving point. It was the thing that stabilized my mind, and I could function on the day to day. And, you know, for me, if I eat something off, it triggers my Asperger's pretty badly. And I was sitting last night and I was talking to a couple of these people, and, you know, they were joking with me and saying, oh, you know, you made a good bet. And, you know, we didn't think the whole cannabis thing was going to work out. And then, you know, they started laughing about the fact, you know, about the whole Asperger's thing. And, you know, we're just like, basically, you know, now that prescription drugs are going to be gone, we're going to be prescribing weed, and, you know, the doctors are going to be making money. And, you know, these people are hyper intelligent, but, you know, the programming of a doctor is, it's all about making money. And, you know, the reality of some of the work that we're doing in Maui on like empathogen medicines, which are, you know, foods and products and compounds that, you know, actually make you feel better, you start to really realize the whole, you know, doctor pharma thing, it's kind of a load of bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I grew up, you know, my dad was an orthopedic surgeon, my aunt's an ER doctor, so I grew up, you know, worshiping doctors, and I took for granted that all doctors were as good as they were, because they were very thorough, they never bullshit. I mean, my aunt doesn't give out pills to anyone, she's very hard about it, so, you know, I grew up around those, but then I just sort of trusted that all doctors were that well-read, that up-to-date. And you start to realize they can never get through all the research that's happening every day, constantly. They're busy from, you know, day in, day out. They're just trying to get Medicare reimbursements. They're doing this or that. But, you know, it is systematic in a lot of ways. And a lot of people are put on these paths just because they don't know any better. So what are some of the concrete steps that you think are helpful other than marijuana? You talked about empathogens.
I mean, right now we've been really corresponding with a lot of people that are, you know, having DEA licenses and running tests on, you know, psilocybin and LSD and MDMA, as well as, you know, food products that are carrying certain compounds and probiotics that, you know, allow the serotonin to release in your, you know, in your brain, and it actually triggers a happiness point. And I was luckily, when I moved to Maui in 2011, I got to encounter a lot of these people that worked with Alexander Shulgin, which, I mean, people that, you know, it feels like they were so placated out of the system, because nobody wanted, you know, the whole thing with how Alexander Shulgin got started at Dow Chemical, you know, it's crazy that it took so long, and now, like, all these companies are getting funded that are testing psilocybin and LSD. But, you know, it's almost like, you know, I talk about the Illuminati, like the people that control the money are so deep that, you know, they do whatever they can to kind of shift things in their perspective. And I know everybody has a problem with Peter Thiel and, you know, the whole Trump thing, but, you know, let's move away from the whole puppets, because, you know, all of that, people are just puppets in government. But when you look at, you know, him funding Privateer, or him funding this new company that's, you know, working with psilocybin, that's where the future is. I mean, I just recently purchased empathogens.io, and I know that with what I'm doing right now, we're going to end up building, you know, a general ledger to start, you know, monitoring these compounds and how they affect people. And there's lots of empathogen medicines all over the world that we haven't even discovered that can help humanity. And right now, that's what I want to do for the world, is I want to uncover and discover those products, because I think what's been taught to us is not the truth.
I actually completely agree with you. I feel like we've lost about 50 years of medicine just because we've completely ignored, you know, when you see a lot of the work that was being done in the 60s and 70s, you know, you had one or two chemists synthesizing most of the psychedelics we know today. And that's just, you know, a couple guys in a basement with no resources.
Yeah, 1000%.
And so, I mean, I think the next 50 years will be really reliant on some of these things, and people will start to realize that they have, and that's the interesting thing is, for 2000 years, people in Peru have known this, and people in South America and all over the world. My girlfriend's family is Native American. You know, they have their peyote ceremonies. I tried some peyote. Peyote was really a remarkable experience, and that helped me with tons of stuff through my life. I felt it was like 10 years of therapy in, you know, 10 hours. That's pretty crazy when you think about how many people have, you know, how many people are going to therapists on a day-to-day basis or weekly basis, and how much money is getting sucked into the system as they just continue. Because it seems like once you start getting help, you never don't need help anymore. It seems like once you're in the system, they never want to let you go.
Well, they say Maui is the healing island. It's the island where you come to peel the onion. And in a strange way, that's what my intersection, or that was my serendipity when I moved to Maui, is all of a sudden meeting people that are working on these products and, you know, peeling my own onion. I used to get very affected by going to, you know, these Persian parties and, you know, sitting with my family, and discussions were revolving around, you know, what kind of car do you drive? How big your house is in Beverly Hills? And there was something about, like, you know, just being there last night and just saying, God, I've worked through this trauma that I had as a child. My life is not defined by this. I don't need to keep score by my bank account. And for me, the awakening was leaving LA now to go to San Francisco and saying, you know what, as, you know, Orthogonal's going down the road of actually raising their equity round, we want the right energy with the people that we work with. We want to play in the sandbox with people in this lifetime and the next that are good people. So when people, and, you know, we don't mention any names, but when people approach us that have been part of this depopulation agenda, whether it's the tobacco industry or the food industry or the pharma industry, even on the days where we are, you know, in modes of desperation to raise money, sometimes we know better than to raise money from people that have their own intentions in mind.
And that's the hard part, especially for entrepreneurs. You know, one reason we steered clear of a lot of VCs this time, because we've taken VC money in the past for some of my companies, and, you know, they kind of treat you like slaves at that point. They want free labor and they want a return on investment, but that's about it in a lot of cases. And so it seems like growing together is a hard balance to strike. And I guess that's what you're trying to do. So what would be your goal, you know, 5-10 years down the line for the types of companies you'd be creating and the types of people you would be working with?
I mean, it's a mirror of what we're doing now. I mean, I envision Orthogonal, you know, as I said to somebody the other day, I envision us in the next 36 months working with probably 100 companies, and almost mirroring what Y Combinator does, but in the empathogen movement. So working with companies that want to end suffering, that want to provide better products, cleaner fuels, cleaner, you know, transparency. I'm looking for a world of utopia, because I always tell people we live on heaven on earth. We just have wrote the story wrong. So, yeah. You know, we're rewriting the story. And, you know, when we talk to investors and they ask us, you know, what is our exit plan? We have no exit. Our exit is for a concept of like orthogonal to go on for centuries, because our goal is to reinvest back into humanity. And if somebody has a strange new idea that's going to help people, we want to co-create with them.
And that's an interesting point as well. Like, it seems like companies today, a lot of people would love to, you know, be more free to try more of these things. But, you know, companies are drug testing. So you can't, you know, at some point your job owns your body at the same time. And, you know, you only have so much time to exercise because you've got your commute. So do you think there are ways we can decentralize some parts of work or reduce, I guess, the power of employers over employees to give people more opportunities to explore, I guess, who they are and build communities and do the things that make people happier?
Yeah, I mean, I think that comes with transparency. I mean, I've sort of gotten away from using the word decentralized, because I think the relational database to, you know, ICOs and utility tokens has kind of become a bad word. But I think when you offer transparency to somebody, I mean, look at the adoption of the iPhone. You know, my grandmother uses an iPhone now and she's almost 90. But, you know, the reality of pulling up an app and being able to QR code something and actually see, okay, this product comes from like a place that encourages slave labor in China. Like, you're not, you know, I think we've been dumbed down as a society. And I'm like sitting here, and a lot of people, you know, because I've done a lot of work in the empathogen medicine side, I've done peyote, I've tried a lot of different things to work on myself. I look in my hotel room and I'm looking at myself and saying, how many kids worked at like $1 an hour to make all this furniture and bedding and everything else? Like, aren't we better than that in a society where companies are worth like trillions of dollars? I really look at my iPhone some days and I'm like, do I really want to be holding a device that's made in China? And it's not about being made in China. I love, you know, Chinese people, and I love, you know, people from Asia, but it's like when you know bad things are going on in those manufacturing facilities, I don't know. I don't want to be dumbed down to that behavior. So transparency is everything in my life.
Yeah, or they might be sticking little microchips in there to hack DoD servers and run Navy ships into walls. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah. I mean, you know how it is. And the reality of it is, listen, they did a good job. They provided us this gateway drug called alcohol. And then they gave us some opiates. And then they gave us some food to, you know, kind of dumb us down. And now we're just a bunch of, like, as the guy in Free Sapien credit. Said, we're just a bunch of well-trained monkeys.
Yep. Just hitting those dopamine receptors every chance we get.
Yeah, totally.
So, I mean, how do you think you convince people to make that change? Because I see so many people, because now that we have phones, it's even worse. Attention spans are getting lower. And I find myself, it happens to me, but I don't even have a choice. You know, if you're working on a company, you got to have a phone, got to have a computer, got to do a million things at the same time. But, you know, do you think there's a place for, I guess, like retreats? Do you think that might be a thing? I've always thought maybe if you had retreats where people could go for a couple weeks and just unplug and just explore, is that the type of thing you might be exploring?
No, you got to look at critical mass as far as what is the cognitive biases of what you receive in your life on the day-to-day, every day. I look at things like the television, which, you know, I don't watch normal TV. I don't watch, like, you know, the news or anything. I look at food. I look at the clothes that I wear. So start thinking about empathogens as molecules and compounds that feel better, that make you feel better. What you got to do with humanity is you got to change the way those atomic structures are built. And when something has a good energy in it and it feels right, people are going to act better. So I think as the world changes, and, you know, I love using a product like, you know, talking about a product like psilocybin or probiotics. When we're able to really unleash those products and the frequency of those products into other products, and humans are able to release serotonin and they're happier, you're going to have a different type of person. The problem is we've taken something like coffee that stimulates us, which, you know, is a better version of cocaine or Adderall. And you basically have created another, you know, $1 trillion market of, you know, dumbing people down again. I love coffee, but do you need a big coffee with a big amount of whipped cream on it? I mean, that's not making you feel great.
Yeah, it's convenient. The ones that are legal are all the ones that seem to make people more productive and less aware.
Yeah, and I don't know if we should be talking about all this stuff on the podcast, but I mean, you're getting right now. You're getting me in full transparency, because I'm right here sitting in Santa Monica. I'm like, holy shit, there is so much mental illness over here. It's unbelievable.
Well, I'm just glad I'm not the only one that notices. I mean, it seems like it is hard to find people who do notice a lot of this stuff. You know, what do you think the difference is? Like, what makes you, you know, is it something that happened that sort of woke you up to this stuff? Or is it just, it's just how you've been? Do you think it's something you're sort of born with, to be really critical of, you know, systems and processes and be constantly questioning these things? Or do you think you grow?
I know my brain is wired a little bit differently, but I think we all are. But I do know when I, you know, basically had my two kids and they're 5 and 7, when I look at them, you know, it's, children are mirrors of yourself. They're a chance to, you know, give your kids something better than you have. I always talk about like past life regressions. And when I see my children, they are my teachers. When I see my son, which, you know, he's basically a fruitarian, but he does eat, you know, protein, he eats meat for protein. I look at the way they eat. I look at the way they, you know, the way they laugh, the way they take in information. They tell me everything I need to know. They're, you know, a lot of spirituality talks about the first attention, what we learn as children. So what I've tried to provide for my children is provide them a life of transparency. They're surrounded by nature. And again, it's hard to do in a place like LA, but I think we need to incorporate different patterns in our day to day. It just, yeah, we need to start building up critical mass to see this shift happen. And it is happening. You know, the great part about it is when I see cannabis going to be federally legal in the not so distant future, I know 10 years from now at the most, we're going to be buying shrooms from the local dispensary. And, you know, that people are not going to be like, oh my gosh, you know, that's an illegal substance. Because those same cousins and uncles of mine that told me I was going to jail 10 years ago, I think they're eating crow pretty bad now because they all want to invest.
Beautiful thing about America. I mean, I went to Amsterdam last year, and you see where their industry is after, you know, how many odd years. And it's, you know, nothing compared to what a California pot shop was even 10 years ago. There's just so much innovation. We have 1,000 odd strains, and they've got 3 that you can choose from as you walk in the door. And so, you know, if there was a place where it was really going to happen, here would be it. And hopefully soon, where we can start making some of those changes.
So we're putting a major bet on the table. Our bet, my partner and I, is we're betting all of our assets that the islands of Hawaii and Maui will be the cannabis and agricultural and pathogen hub of the world. And we believe that. We think there is a magic to Maui especially, and a lot of the ancient civilizations where these things were already written, that Maui was supposed to be the hub of plant medicine.
There is certainly something magical when you go to Hawaii, and especially all the cultures, all the, yeah. No, I mean, the last time I was there, it definitely feels different. You feel disconnected from the rest of the world, but in a very nice way.
Well, one of my cousins gave me this vape pen yesterday of like some green crack or AK-47. I was like,
oh, the green crack is
I was like, okay, that's good. You know, it's pretty strong and everything, and you could almost taste the pesticides in it. And then I said, why don't you try some of this Maui oil, the, you know, clean extraction. I know the farmer, the guy's like a 72-year-old man that, you know, grows it and extracts it. And you can taste the difference. There's a frequency difference. The problem with California is it's going in the same cycle as everything else. How do we monetize something and do it as cheaply as possible with the lowest quality control? And so when I look at our business, we want to be that product that makes you feel good and you know who your farmer is.
Yeah, because when you get it at a dispensary in California, you know, it can be weeks old, months old, who knows how old it is, you know, dried out. And there's, I mean, I can't imagine the difference if it's, you know, truly fresh. I guess, do you believe, you know, they've done studies where if you like speak to plants, then it can slightly change, you know, certain metabolic characteristics and things like that. Do you think that like the way you raise the plant itself can have an impact? And I think they're sending marijuana to space to see if zero gravity has an effect on how the cannabinoids manifest themselves. So do you think there's something to be said about the environment? Some of these things are grown that we don't truly understand that process.
Of course, we're all molecules and atoms. I mean, when you talk to your baby, and when I told my son as a child, I said, no fear, you know, live your life the way you want to, and constantly, you know, putting love and energy. I see people doing that to their marijuana plants in Hawaii. Of course you're going to have a product that is more high vibe. You empower things. Everything is a frequency of energy. Everything has an atomic structure. And I think that, you know, as smart as we are as human beings, sometimes we're really stupid. If you tell a child or a plant or an animal that they're dumb and they're an idiot and they're a bad child, no, things are not gonna work out well for that person or that plant.
And so do you think, no, that makes sense. Trying to figure out how I can phrase this. Like, do you think there are ways our present can manifest in our future? Like, there are certain things we can do. Like, how do you feel about, I guess, sort of some of the quantum theorems that our consciousness has an effect on the things around us and the future that we might have, and that there are all these variabilities, and this might be way outside the scope of what we're talking about.
This is a tough one that always could put my foot in my mouth. But, you know, I talk a lot about conventional religion, and I talk about, you know, conventional eating and conventional this. When you start looking at things where they're less about, let's say, making money first and more about helping people, you have a different outlook on how things work out. And it's evident with many of the investments and many of the companies that we've been involved with. When I look at a company like WeFunder that is about to hit $100 million in crowdfunding, I know that we've given power back to the people, and that number is only going to go up. When I see Betterment allows you to invest money without charging you, and you're not dealing with some stockbroker that's trying to like make commissions. Yeah, we're in a different, those little movements forward are what's gonna change the world. And on a positive end, cause I always like to look at everything as the glass being full, the world is changing. Things are shifting. cannabis is happening, you know, cryptocurrencies are happening, you know, real foods that don't have, that are not processed, that don't have fillers, organic, you know, not organic, but like raw juices. And, you know, things are shifting. We're not where we were at, where, you know, my mom was taking me to McDonald's and I'm ordering my chicken McNuggets with French fries. You know, we're in a different age.
Do you think the people...
And unfortunately, that's all we have for you. His mic got disconnected, or his connection got disconnected pretty randomly, and then we could not get back in touch, unfortunately. But hopefully we'll get to continue this conversation sometime in the future, and I encourage you guys to check out his website if you're a founder looking for funding, or someone interested in learning a little bit more about some of his portfolio companies. That can all be found at orthogonalthinker.com. And we will be coming back on the 10th with a podcast from the co-founder of AdBank. We'll see you then.